I get older, losing my hair many years from now.
Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Paul McCartney wrote When I'm 64 when he was just 16 years old. And to him, that may have seemed unimaginably old. But now, more than 50 years later, that song got one science writer thinking about whether we may be entering an era in which it's possible to actually live to 164. Best-selling author David Ewing Duncan has written for The New York Times, The Atlantic Monthly, and many other publications, and his latest book is When I'm 164, The New Science of Radical Life Extension and What Happens If It Succeeds. David Ewing Duncan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you about some of the ways in which you see potentially really expanding lifespans, not just by a year or two, but by 20, 30, 40 years or more. And you sort of break it down. And one of the ways is just healthy living and preventive medicine, which sounds as simple as it can be. But how does that factor in to getting us all to live longer?
Well, I'm a science writer, and for many, many years, you know, I've covered life sciences, biotechnology, and I've been writing story after story after story about all these dramatic new breakthroughs that seem to be happening or on the cusp. And I've been somewhat of a skeptic, to be honest with you, you know, when this is all going to really happen in a big dramatic way. But over time, I've really begun to realize that these new technologies, first of all, are boosting lifespan by about 3 years a decade. And there's several areas, and I get into four of them in the book. One of them is healthy living and what I call predictive and preventive medicine, which in a way has gotten us this far. But, you know, we continue to improve nutrition, certainly in this country. You know, if we can reduce obesity, some other issues, that overall societal life expectancy will continue to rise. But then you get into the more exotic science, like, say, genetics. You know, there are several animals, actually, that geneticists have been able to fix up so that they boost their lifespan, sometimes by many times. I mean, these are not complex organisms, or at least as complex as humans. Then you get into the regeneration with stem cells, those issues, and then also what I call machine solutions, which is adding some spare parts from machine technologies.
I want to get into a few of those. First, let me bring you back to the sort of healthy living thing. We saw a study in Nature recently that debunked a belief that a lot of people have had for several years, that it had come out of some other studies, that if you reduce calories throughout your life, and I think this study in Nature looked at people who were reducing their calories by about 30%. And the newest study showed it really did not help people live any longer. But there had been some thinking that this might be one key, at least, to living substantially longer. And I wonder, when you saw this come out in Nature, did you think, oh, there was another opportunity, and it's been sort of debunked?
Well, actually, like a lot of science, it's been confused. That study was a National Institutes of Health study that was testing rhesus monkeys, which are primates, you know, fairly close to humans, to see if they got the same results that happened in some less complex organisms, or at least organisms that aren't as close to humans, mice, flies, worms, that sort of thing. And it turned out that over 25 years, these rhesus monkeys, when they reduced their calories, which does cause some health benefits and life extension in other organisms, in fact, didn't work for these close cousins of humans. But this contradicts a study out of the University of Wisconsin a few years back, I think it was 2009, that suggested that there was a small life extension benefit. There's been some controversy over how that study was done, but I think we still have an open question here, really, on this. But even if, say, it works, we're still talking about a fairly small boost. And the reality is that if you want to go on a caloric restriction diet, you do get some health benefits, but you're basically starving yourself. So I don't know how many people are going to really go along with
that.
So
it's a question about quality of life while you're doing it.
Right. You might eke out a few more years, but, you know, you missed out on a lot on the way, potentially.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the more sort of high-tech ways of potentially really extending life. You mentioned gene manipulation before, and we certainly have entered into a world where people can swab their cheek or send in a sample to any number of companies. You can find them on the internet, and they will sequence your DNA for you. I mean, you can learn a lot about yourself in terms of certain kinds of proclivities that you have towards certain diseases. Does that open up a new area for potentially really figuring things out about individual people and extending life.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, my previous book, the last one was called Experimental Man, and I went out and got myself tested for everything, including genes. So I have some personal experience with that. But yes, there has been some work done in genetics that suggests that there might be what they call some regulatory pathways that seem to potentially adjust lifespan in some organisms if you turn up or turn down the expression of these genes. They basically activate systems that, at least in some organisms, as I said earlier, have increased lifespan by many times. The first time I saw this, by the way, was almost 10 years ago. I was in a lab in the University of California in San Francisco, and I watched videos of little tiny worms. They're about a millimeter long. And these little guys were just frisky, running around in their little broth, and they were actually living 10 times the lifespan of a normal worm. So this has been done, although worms aren't humans.
Well, and is there also the possibility of figuring out, oh, you have a proclivity towards a certain disease and either trying to turn off the genes that control that disease or trying to do something, give you some sort of medication, knowing that this is down the line for you potentially and trying to stave off that ever happening to you?
Well, at the moment, we're not really manipulating genes in humans in that way, but certainly the impact of genes, which are, you know, creating proteins, enzymes, et cetera, a lot of the drugs that we take right now have some impact. And in fact, one of the key points here in this little book I wrote is that much of this life extension possibility has kind of snuck up on us. Many of the interventions now, drugs that might activate or deactivate an enzyme or some other technique, end up obviously, in some ways, increasing lifespan. You know, if you keep somebody alive who might have died from a particular disease, well, you're extending lifespan. So in a way, we're already doing that. But what I'm writing about in the book is that we're about to, or we are moving into a really more aggressive, I think, period of using genetics. And again, it's mostly to help people who are sick. We're not thinking, almost no researcher is intentionally trying to increase lifespan, or at least mainstream researchers,
right.
They're trying to treat cancer or heart disease. And the outcome is, one of my people I interviewed from the NIH said, a side effect of much of this new work is going to be life extension.
This is Innovation Hub, and we're talking to David Ewing Duncan about aging. He's the author of When I'm 164, The New Science of Radical Life Extension and What Happens If It Succeeds. So, David Duncan, you've asked many people, on the order of 30,000, I think, how long they'd actually like to live, which is a really interesting and pretty tough question.
Right. This was a sort of informal survey I have given in talks over the last 3 or 4 years, where I have asked audiences with a show of hands, how long do you want to live? And gave four possible answers just to kind of simplify it. 80 years, which is about the life expectancy in the West right now. 120, which is about as long as any human has lived that we know of. And 150, which would be beyond that age that people have lived to. And then more recently, I added forever. And so I asked those four questions. And it was a very interesting breakdown, as it turned out.
Okay, and what did you find? I would think a lot of people would have said forever, but I don't know that that's necessarily what you found.
That isn't what I found. I mean, I would have thought that too, although a couple of people, including the sci-fi writer Bruce Sterling, has told me that's a more of a metaphysical question than the other three answers, or metaphysical answer. So it broke down like this. 60% wanted to live to be 80. About 30% 120, a little less than 10% 150, and a little less than 1% forever. Although I might add that we've been having an open survey on our whenim164.com website since the book came out, and we've had a couple more thousand people vote on that, and I seem to be having a lot of forever people voting, because you can watch the tabulation there, and it's gone up from 1% to over 2% now.
And David Duncan, when you got these responses, how did you interpret the data?
Well, it was fascinating to me because I got to ask a lot of these people in the last year or so. I've spent asking why you voted the way you did. In fact, the latter half of the book, the first half is on the science. The latter half is really on why or why not people might want to live to be, say, 150. And we broke that down to about 7 or 8 reasons that might be downsides for living that long, and four or five reasons for upsides. So we got a rich sort of list of reasons, which I found absolutely fascinating because it really dipped into what people are really thinking about, and it's very individual. I mean, some people worry about money, you know, paying for it. Other people just say life is hard. Others say, I can't imagine living, even not living 1,000 years, because I have so many things I want to do in life. So it really is a wide range of answers.
Let me pick up on that issue of money. Do you frequently hear the concern that there may be this divide because of financial resources, that you might only be well equipped to live a long time if you're quite wealthy?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I'm from California. I live out in San Francisco, Silicon Valley. And not surprisingly, a lot of the tech billionaires out there are at the forefront of funding and talking about living a very long time. I mean, if I had $1 billion, I might feel a little better about living 1,000 years or 500 years or 150 years.
But even if we can find the financial resources, how do we deal with population growth and limited resources on the planet? I wonder how much keeping people alive longer should be thought about from the standpoint of sustainability.
Well, this was a big area that people discussed when I asked people why or why not they would want to live to be 150. And it really has to do with the difference between what might be considered some individual benefits versus societal. And I actually dedicate the book to my great-great-great-grandchildren. If I lived to be 164, I might actually see them. But I personally am a little troubled, not necessarily with the last year of life, because, in fact, if these technologies work, you'll still have a last year of life. And that, in fact, some of the issues we're talking about will, I think, still be something that we'll talk about. What we're really talking about is slowing aging, so you're having more people, potentially very productive people. And this is where it gets a little interesting from a planetary standpoint. How will this impact, say, the use of resources? And I'm not talking about necessarily old people. In fact, you could even say that this has already happened since we, you know, have a lot more people living a lot longer and healthier and more productive. I mean, issues of Social Security and Medicare. If people are very healthy at 80 or 90, you know, and they're going to live to be 150, you know, can society afford to have them retired? On the other hand, can they afford to have them work? Will I be actually replacing my great-great-great-grandson taking his job? So these are some interesting issues. And again, this is a more of a thought experiment than anything. It's to make us really think a little bit about what some of the issues that may arise if, in fact, we continue to have this life extension as it's happening now, and if it even gets more radical.
I wonder, you know, we mentioned at the beginning that you had all these sort of technical ways that we may extend our lives. One of them is machines. And you say, we've used sort of machines, so to speak, as simple as glasses to make us see better, or as more complex, potentially as pacemakers, right, to make our hearts beat better. Are there machines that you see coming that could really help us improve our lives?
Yes. In fact, we're really on the cusp, and even in some cases over. For instance, there's something called a cochlear implant, and the cochlear is a nerve in your brain that's responsible for your hearing, essentially. It's translating waves of energy, sound waves, into something we can understand. And there's a little device for people that have had their hearing damaged, at least for some people who are deaf, that can be clipped in and connected to this nerve with a little computer, and it can actually translate even music. And they're working on that same kind of device for the eyes. There are deep brain implants that are being used now for severe cases of Parkinson's disease to control tremors. There are some very, very interesting and, to some people, exciting new developments on the machine end of things.
And Stephen Hawking has benefited from some of this, right?
Right. This is a piece I did in the Times a couple months ago. This is actually a device. It's just basically a headband with a single electrode, and this can read brain waves. And Stephen Hawking was taught to think a certain way. You know, in other words, a kind of consistent pattern of thought, and that could potentially be translated into him being able to, say, write a sentence on a computer. And they're still working on that, but there are even some brain implants that have been surgically implanted in a couple of people that have allowed them. These are quadriplegics, paralyzed individuals who can use thought to essentially control machines. And this is very, very leading edge right now, and it's probably years away, but it shows you where things are headed.
And finally, in our last minute, David Duncan, has your thinking on this changed at all? Would you still want to live to be 150 or 164?
Well, I actually never did want to live to be 164. My vote is probably somewhere between 80 and 120. Okay. I'd like to live as long, you know, a long, healthy life, healthy being important. And, you know, I think about my father and mother, who were both in their early 80s, both very healthy. But they've said, you know, I've had a good life. I'm essentially, you know, through. I don't know. Talk to me when I'm 80. I may change my mind.
Okay, we will. My vote may be for 120, but check back with me in 40 years. We can talk about it. We've been talking about aging and about what it would mean to increase our lifespan and live well beyond the age of 100. And I've been speaking with David Ewing Duncan, and his latest book is When I'm 164. The New Science of Radical Life Extension and What Happens If It Succeeds. David Duncan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And when we come back, a discussion about media and kids. How much is too much? What does the most recent research show us about what kind of impact screen time, be it a TV or a computer, has on 2-year-olds, on 4-year-olds, on 10-year-olds?
What we see in virtually everyone is desensitization. That the more you spend time with anything, violence or anything else, the less it bothers you, the more normalized it is, the more acceptable it is.
Dr. Michael Rich will be my guest. Remember, you can subscribe to all our shows on iTunes and visit us at wgbh.org/innovationhub, or you can follow us on Twitter at @WGBHInnovate. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.
Will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm